Welcome. You're listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast, the show that cuts through the fog of war and updates you about the ongoing conflict in Ukraine. Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts.
Hello, I'm Marina Yevshan, co-host of the Russia-Ukraine War Report Podcast, and today is March the 5th, 2024. It has been 3,690 days since Russia started covert military operations in Crimea, 10 years and 14 days since the start of the Russia-Ukraine war, and 2 years and 11 days since Russia expanded its war aggression. Today's podcast looks at events that happened on Monday and Tuesday morning. During the podcast, you will find the Russia-Ukraine war map helpful to visualize the areas discussed. A link is in the podcast description. There are minor updates today. The Russia-Ukraine war report is compiled by our team from around the world. Today's report includes information from our direct contacts and journalists in Ukraine, the Russian Ministry of Defense, the General Staff of the Armed Forces of Ukraine Morning Reports, operational commands north, south and east of Ukraine, open-source intelligence, our in-house team of analysts and geospatial experts, and pro-Ukrainian and pro-Russian male bloggers and social media channels with a track record of trying to be accurate. We have one mission, the truth, because the truth matters. Let's start with the daily assessment. There are only small changes from yesterday, so if you want to skip ahead, it's fine, I won't even know. 1. Ukraine's acute shortage of ammunition and air defense missiles will become catastrophic by April, and we see no viable path to stabilize the situation. 2. The United States has ended financial and military aid to Ukraine, unless there is an unforeseen event that changes congressional leadership before the 2024 elections. 3. Due to necessity, Ukraine has shifted to a Fabian strategy to wear down Russian combat power while conserving resources. 4. The Kremlin is preparing to complete the transformation of the governmental structure into a dictatorship, culminating after the results of the sham presidential elections are released. 5. While the possibility of an intentional nuclear accident caused by Russian occupiers at the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant remains low, the condition is more serious than what the International Atomic Energy Agency is reporting. 6. Russian-aligned assets have co-opted the ongoing Polish border blockade, which has become an open act of hybrid warfare against Ukraine and the Baltic states. We begin today's war report in the Kupiansk area of operation, or AO, of Kharkiv Oblast. The General Staff of the Armed Forces of Ukraine reported that Russian attacks in the area of Sinkivka were repulsed. Russian mercenary male blogger Wogonzo claimed that fighting continued in the area of Tabaevka. In the Kremennaya AO of Luhansk Oblast, Russian forces launched a significant attack east of Terny, which ended in failure. Geolocated videos and pictures showed that Russian forces used tanks, infantry fighting vehicles, or IFVs, and Chinese-built Desert Cross 1003 ATVs for mobility. During the first wave, a Russian tank was destroyed by a mine, with the remaining seven vehicles swarmed by first-person view one-way drones. Despite the failed attempt to breach Ukrainian defenses, the next two waves of light infantry moved forward, suffered heavy losses, and retreated. We link to the video showing the attack in our situation report, and more information is available in the podcast description. Wogonzo claimed that Russian forces attacked in the direction of Yampolivka and were able to advance, but pictures and videos geolocated by our analysts showed there was no change to the line of conflict. Let's talk about the Donbas, starting in northeast Donetsk Oblast. In the Bakhmut AO, fighting continues in the area of Bogdanivka, with no change to the situation. Geolocated video showed that Russian forces had advanced into the northeastern part of Ivanivka, although the area appears to be a no-man's land. The nearly 5-minute-long video showed three previously destroyed Russian IFVs and numerous bodies lying in the streets. The resolution made it impossible to determine if the bodies were military or civilian, Russian or Ukrainian, or a combination. We link to the video. In the Klishivka AO, intense positional fighting continued north and east of Klishivka and east of Andriivka. In southwest Donetsk Oblast, the armed forces of Ukraine claimed that Russian advances in the Avdiivka AO have been stopped. The General Staff of the Armed Forces of Ukraine reported a Russian attack in the area of Novoselivka had been repulsed. The village is on the front lines, but has been under absolute Russian control since September 2022. West of Avdiivka, fighting continued on the eastern edge of Berdyche, the western part of Orlivka, where Russian troops made incremental gains, and the eastern edge of Tonenke. Russian forces couldn't hold the tree line east of Semenivka and fell back. We made small changes to the war map. Moving to assessment, it is premature to declare that Ukraine has stabilized the defensive lines west of Avdiivka, but the situation has improved significantly from a week ago. An extended period of fair weather has enabled Ukraine to leverage its drone warfare advantage, interdicting Russian supply and logistics. Russian personnel and materials have to move through open fields, offering no cover. Additionally, Russian commanders have shifted resources to the Vuhledar AO. More on that in a minute. Russian attempts to advance deeper in the eastern part of Pervomayske and toward the Ukrainian firebase at Nevelske continued without success. The most intense fighting continued in the Marinka and Vuhledar AOs, where Russia is concentrating its combat potential. Russian forces continued their attacks south and east of Krasnohorivka with no change in the situation. Fighting also continued east of Georgievka. We made a small adjustment to the line of conflict, moving Russian troops further east based on improved intelligence. Russian attempts to take full military control of Pobeda and advance in the direction of Kostyantynivka were unsuccessful. The Ukrainian 46th Aeromobile Brigade reported that Russian forces are currently bogged down from Georgievka to Solotka. This is a good place to open up the war map, if you haven't yet. There's a link in the podcast description. The strategic goal for Russia is to capture Vuhledar, and a year ago Russian attempts to do that through a direct attack ended catastrophically. If Russian forces want to go around Vuhledar the long way, they can't reach the strategic settlement of Kurakhove without passing through Georgievka. But there's a problem. That's not possible without capturing Krasnohorivka first. A Russian advance through Georgievka would have fully exposed ground lines of communication, GLOCKs, that supply lines. If Russian forces want to reach Vuhledar on a more direct route, they can't reach Kostyantynivka without pushing through Pobeda, but the terrain is unfavorable in that direction. That leaves one final option – a frontal attack through Novomikhailivka. In our assessment, after attempting to advance to Kurakhove through Marinka for 2 years and the failed attack on Vuhledar, Russian commanders have gone all in at Novomikhailivka. Speaking to the United States state media agency Radio Liberty, Dmytro Lyhoviy, the spokesperson for the Tavri Operational Strategic Group, said, quote, "There are more attacks there every day than on the Avdiivka front. For example, yesterday there were 20 attacks on the Avdiivka front and 30 in Novomikhailivka and its surroundings." Unquote. Russian forces remained in the settlement of Novomikhailivka, but no further advances were recorded. Russian troops also tried to advance in the direction of Vodyane from Solotke without success. As we had previously assessed, the Russian capture of Kostyantynivka will complicate the defense of Bakhmut. If Russian forces push through Pobeda and threaten Kostyantynivka, it could force a Ukrainian withdrawal from Novomikhailivka and Paraskovivka. For now, defenses are holding. In the Staromlinivka AO, Russian forces continued attempts to advance north of Novomayorske without success, and a Russian attack south of Urozhayne was repulsed. In Zaporizhia Oblast, there was only light positional fighting in the Orikhiv AO. Russian sources reported fighting continued in the area of Robotyne and said they were facing significant challenges. Russian Milblogger 2 Majors claimed that Ukrainian electronic warfare had degraded Russian intelligence, reconnaissance and surveillance, also known as ISR, to the point that counter-battery is no longer possible. Quote, "Our drones are being jammed. Their eyes," quick sidebar, he means ISR drones, "are all around. up to 10 kilometers deep to us from the line of conflict. As soon as we turn on our electronic warfare, they fly away, but then we lose contact with everyone. Another quick sidebar, the Russian electronic warfare systems interfere with their drones and radio communication. We have to turn off the electronic warfare. They are all sitting on Starlinks and see everything. The drones are flying via GPS and the internet, and the decision of the Ukrainian armed forces to open fire on us is made instantly. In order to shoot, we have to go through 7 authorities. Plus, we simply don't have enough drones. Until we suppress the artillery, we will not take Robotyne. In 2 months, I have not seen a single Ukrainian vehicle, only attack drones. Unquote. The acting chairman of the Energoatom board, Petro Kotin, reported that Russian occupiers had removed all remaining Energoatom personnel at the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant, or ZNPP. Quote, "Our experienced staff is no longer present there. In February, the invaders drove out the last of our people, who remained faithful to Ukraine, and ensured security at the station." Unquote. Kotin said that at the start of 2024, there were 360 Ukrainian staffers still at the plant. At the time of publication, the International Atomic Energy Agency had not released a statement. Early in the day, Director General Rafael Grossi addressed the IAEA Board of Governors in Vienna, Austria, saying, quote, "The situation at ZNPP continues to be very precarious, with 6 out of the 7 pillars of nuclear safety and security being compromised fully or partially." Unquote. And yet, our little news organization continues to be one of the only ones in the West talking about this. The Ukrainian armed forces extended their streak in the Black Sea to 7 out of 8 months. I'm sorry, it's just this is exciting news. Russia lost another Black Sea fleet ship, with Ukraine sinking at least one vessel in 7 of the last 8 months. During an attack near Feodosia, at least one Mark V CB Beyond Crude Surface vessel struck the Project 22-160 patrol ship Sergei Kotov. There's a video, and we'll link to it in our situation report. Multiple Russian and Belarusian sources and the main Directorate of Intelligence for the Ukrainian Ministry of Defense, UHUR, have reported that the ship sunk shortly after it was hit. The Kotov was one of the most modern vessels in the Russian Navy. The Project 22-160 class was approved for production in 2014, and construction of the Kotov was completed in 2021. The 94-meter, 1,600-ton corvette was commissioned on July 30, 2022, and suffered damage to its propulsion system in a September 2023 drone attack. The ship had a crew of 80 and a hangar for a Ka-27 helicopter. Russian officials also closed the Crimean Kerch Bridge for 9 hours, with local reports of explosions in the area. The highway portions were reopened, but at the time of recording, rail service was still blocked. In the Odessa region, a Shahed 136 one-way drone struck a closed beach resort, starting a fire. There were no casualties. There were reports that a, quote, "military object" struck Poland. Investigators later discovered that the object was a meteorite. Polish farmers announced they were extending their border blockade with Ukraine through April the 30th, apparently deciding to ignore the planting season. Originally, Russian-backed organizers said they would end the protest on March the 10th. The Prime Minister of Poland, Donald Tusk, requested the Polish Sejm to start discussions on boycotting Russian and Belarusian agricultural products. The request came after meeting the Prime Minister of Lithuania, Ingrida Šimonytė. Tusk added that a full boycott by the European Union is essential. Quote, "It is not only about strengthening sanctions because of Russia's invasion of Ukraine and Belarus's cooperation with Russia, but also stepping up protection of the agricultural sector in Lithuania and Poland. The markets really face great pressure because of the war. And undoubtedly, one of the main tasks is to block exports from Russia and Belarus to countries that have long been recipients of these products." Unquote. my update for the Russian front has a tale of two oil depots. A Ukrainian drone struck a fuel depot in the Gubkinsky district of Belgorod, sparking a very large fire. At least one storage tank was involved. The first reports of damage came 8 minutes after Russian officials declared they had successfully shot down three drones in the area. Russian officials also claim they found an unexploded Ukrainian drone on the grounds of the oil terminal in St. Petersburg. The drone reportedly reached the terminal undetected, but failed to explode. Here is my theater-wide update. After a lull, Russia launched 22 Iranian-sourced Shahed-136 one-way drones at the Odessa region, with 18 intercepted. French President Emmanuel Macron said that talks about sending European troops to Ukraine, quote, does not mean that we are considering sending French troops to Ukraine in the near future, but that we are opening a debate and thinking about everything that can be done to support Ukraine, especially on Ukrainian territory, unquote. At least 5 European nations and Canada have signaled they would support a non-combat ground mission in Ukraine. Lithuania has joined the Czech Republic's initiative to purchase 800,122 and 155mm artillery shells for Ukraine. The first batch of NATO standard 155mm rounds are supposed to arrive in a few weeks. Time for another visit to the land of Mobix, mobilization and the Mir. We have a follow-up on the former chief intelligence officer of the Española Brigade, a volunteer group of self-declared football, soccer for our American listeners, hooligans, who was killed in action over the weekend. We had reported on Vyacheslav Subotin last year. When he first arrived in Ukraine, he made a video promising to cut off the ears of Ukrainian soldiers and bring them back to his children as trophies. Yes, he looked into a camera and said that out loud. Moscow directed state media agencies not to provide news coverage of returning penal soldiers who commit crimes. But there's been a streak of crimes so awful they can't be ignored. Former primary school physical education teacher Ilya Kanakhin was convicted of murder in 2010 after stabbing a man 59 times and driving a nail in each of his eyes. He spent 9.5 years in prison and was released in 2020, almost immediately killing another man by stabbing him 79 times. He signed a contract with private military company Wagner Group before November 2022 and completed his tour. Kanakhin was just arrested for the murder of a 26-year-old woman. After killing her, he dragged the body into a basement and tried to behead and dismember it. How do you like that for a mysterious Russian soul? And that's what we know. Your support of my home, Ukraine, helps us make history and protect the future for all.
You've been listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast. To help keep us independent, please consider providing financial support by becoming a patron. Want on-demand news in your hand? Download the Google News app and make Malcontent News one of your favorites to receive breaking news updates. Thank you for listening.